Lucinda Looks Back, written and narrated by Shirley Hyatt. From her book of short stories, 20 Tales with a Twist.
The accumulation of every second runs like water over stones, forming a gigantic pool that holds the sum of our existence. A pool we can dive into at any time to swim among the big and the little moments of our lives. After rereading the words, I closed the book, thanking God for my mother's writings. Her thoughtful, clear-minded note-keeping certainly was a help these days. These days, I can't help but marvel at the way my own mind works. Suddenly, I'm reliving an event that happened 70 years ago, while I can't remember what I did yesterday. Undoubtedly, it's because yesterday was just another day in a string of ordinary hours that left no mark on my emotions. It's because memories are not built on the mundane, but on the extraordinary, on events that have a strong emotional effect and were, in a sense, permanently etched on the pages of the inner book of my life. Opening Mother's memory book again, I turned to a place marked with a blue ribbon. Life. I have often pondered its profundity, the fact that an infant grows without the ability to mark the billions of lessons learned, innately knowing that those feet were made to stand up on, to walk on, and to run and run. The curious 6-year-old has no way to measure the changes incurred on the way to becoming 7. A child with a scraped knee that leaves only a pale scar as a reminder of a moment that arrived quickly and in the blink of an eye was gone. Suddenly, she finds she is 30 years old, and then 50 steps in to claim her, and oh my, there is gray in her hair. As I sit here, the book closed and resting on my lap, I look out the window to see that the sun is failing in the late afternoon sky, and I feel the urgency of time. I want to reach out and take my disappearing existence by the arm and stop it in its flight. Where has my life gone? After all these years, I know I'm coming to the end of my journey. A journey that, in fact, I recognize has left me feeling mostly satisfied. That's a great thing, I tell myself, to have spent my life in such a way that I feel a certain amount of satisfaction. I know not everyone feels as I do, that not everyone has sought and found the treasures they once yearned for. Maybe that's because not everyone came from my stock, had my heart and soul, and because no one else was exactly like me. I wonder, does everyone own the sense of being a tiny speck in the great ocean of humanity, somehow linked together and yet utterly alone? The truth is, no matter how far I have traveled, how many faces I have searched, I understand that life is a continuing mystery that will never be fully unraveled, especially by someone like me. Leaning back in my chair, I let my mind drift back in time to cast a hook into my childhood, one crammed with adventure. It makes me smile to remember that our family had once lived like nomads, gathering up our tents and those few items of necessity to follow a star that had guided our parents, yet was one my sister Marie and I could not find in a sky that glittered with a million possibilities. I'd picked up my doll and my crayons, she her favorite books, as we got into the car to be driven to the next oasis and the start of a new adventure. I can see Daddy, his hands clasping the steering wheel. He makes us laugh as he yodels and clears his throat dramatically, warming up his voice to launch into a series of Stephen Foster songs. Mother joins in, filling the sedan with the songs she loves, the ones heard around a campfire that spoke of times that were going to get better. Better than what, I never could determine. Along the journey, we seem to follow the seasons, the ripening of fruits on the trees and the berries on the vines. We climbed rickety ladders to pluck cherries by the stems, eating our share as we filled the buckets that would be emptied into crates and set out on roadside stands for people to buy. In the heat of the summer, we crawled along the narrow rows of strawberry patches on our knees, wearing out our jeans as we tenderly pulled the red fruit from the vine. In the fall, when the winds had whipped up the leaves and stripped the trees of their greenery, we drove to dry fields where potatoes lay like mounds of earth, ready to be picked up and stowed in burlap sacks that slumped beside the long rows like headless trolls. I closed my eyes. Did we really join those people who labored in the fields, or did I just imagine myself in that role as the scene slid by the window of our car? I begin to wonder if they are my own memories or those put on me by my parents, even by the faces I see on the news programs, faces that are so familiar they have taken on the role of old friends. Am I telling my own story, or a version of a complete stranger's, who paused to look into my eyes, transferring her memories into my fertile mind? I don't know where to put the end, put the period in a long string of such thoughts. When I am no longer here, like the photos that line my walls, will my imagining still hang in the ethers? And when people walk into the room to stand with their eyes drawing in the images captured and affixed to paper, will they feel a little twinge as what they see bobs into view on their own ocean of memories? My mind comes alive with the possibilities of the mark that can be left by one single life like mine, one infant who came into the world, complete with the DNA passed on to me by my parents and their parents before them, and on and on. Suddenly, I wonder if that was the purpose of my little family's meanderings. I recall those years on the road so often they are deep ruts in my memory lane that require little or no steering on my part. Once I set out, they glide along without any effort. I see the four of us wending our way from one spot to the next, my sister and I believing it was something our little family just did, something that was fun. It seems to me that we had stopped once in a while just so Dad could fix something for somebody, a broken part on a car or a piece of machinery. He had a knack for bringing broken things back to life. Meanwhile, my sister and I would spend hours in the local library. Mother would go off by herself to write in big lined tablets she accumulated in a canvas satchel like the kind you'd take to the beach. I'm keeping a kind of diary, making comments and putting down my thoughts. I'm a compulsive note-taker, she'd explained to us with a smile. You girls may find it interesting later on when I get it set into some kind of order, but for now it's not very good reading. We took her at her word. We'd seen our mother's writing and compared it laughingly to hand scratches. We didn't know about a thing called shorthand, a skill she had developed when she was a private secretary. Mother possessed the unfailing ability to build a story out of the scenes viewed through her window in the front seat of our sedan. The farmhouse at the end of the lane had a barn and stables, and there were people there who lived interesting lives within those forbidding barbed wire fences. She drew mental pictures of their industry, people who spent their time in the quiet pursuit of sowing seeds, harvesting crops, enjoying the bounty of the good earth. Marie and I decided our mother was writing down all those little stories she told us in order to stop our endless string of questions. All those stories, and much more, we wouldn't know about until we were able to get our hands on what came out of her shorthand scribbles and printed neatly in a nicely bound book. So in the back seat, we entertain ourselves by playing games like Cat's Cradle and One Potato, Two Potato, and Hangman and Tic-Tac-Toe. Sitting on opposite sides, we looked out the window and counted white horses or red barns or anything that we could think up that offered an opportunity to pit us against each other. We hummed along the roads that connected us to campgrounds, where we would shower and wash our clothes and visit with other campers. In the evening, someone had a guitar and maybe a banjo, and we sang songs and shared stories. Then we filed away our newfound memories and traveled on. As I feel my stomach send out the message that it is dinner time, I can truthfully say nothing tasted better than those just picked fruits and vegetables, and there was no substitute for coffee boiled in a pan over a campfire where the pine trees spread green and sheltering arms against a brilliant blue sky. Through the years, Marie and I continued to remind each other of those early days when every morning there was the announcement of new understanding about the people who came before us. I do love that Mother's scribbles were translated and bound up in fine linen, always at the ready. Her books are large and full of pictures, and once opened, their words come to life. Hardly a day goes by that I don't feel drawn inside their pages. All at once, I can hear the old songs spring up inside my head. My father's deep bass, Mother's clear soprano, Marie and I bleeding out our own renditions while trying not to giggle, and the tears spring to my eyes. What a glorious time we had. There was a new vista at every turn, and no matter what, my sister and I always knew we were safe inside our car and that it ran on solid ground. My reminiscences are cut short by the sudden appearance of Marie. "Hello," she said, touching my shoulder as she passed by. "Did you have a nap while I was out?" I sat still, wondering how to answer as she bustled about, preparing our dinner, setting the table. I searched my mind. Did I take a nap? Could my memories really have been a dream? It didn't feel like it. "Marie," I asked tentatively, "all those years we spent traveling all over the country, that was the best time of our lives, wasn't it?" Marie placed a hand on my shoulder and bent to look into my eyes. "You mean those 2 summers we went on the road while Mom researched her family history?" I felt unsure again. Had it really only been 2 summers? "I thought it was every year," I said, aware of the tremor in my voice. "No, dear. Remember, she wanted to trace her ancestors' migration. They came all the way from Norway. They started out in New York and made their way clear across the country. We followed their movements, went to the places they had lived in, so we could have a first-hand feel for their lives." Marie smiled at me. "And Dad took the pictures for her books." "Then we didn't miss years and years of school?" I said, frowning. "No, but don't busy your mind with those details. We did have a wonderful time, didn't we?" I thought for a minute. "Marie, did we have to pick fruit and potatoes because we were too poor to buy our own food?" Marie laughed. "Oh, my, no. It was Mom's idea. She was determined that we feel connected to the lives of her grandparents. They were immigrants who had to take work wherever they could find it. It was a true way of life for them, but it wasn't true for us. It was really more like an educational vacation." I drew my sister's attention to the framed photos on the wall. "Marie, who took all those pictures?" "You did. And you taught other people how to use cameras. You have had a wonderful career," she said, wheeling my chair up to the table. I felt the clouds lift from my mind. "Marie, do you remember what Mom used to say to us?" "I think so. It was that we shouldn't worry, and we were to keep our eyes and ears open and just enjoy the ride." I heaved a sigh. "That's it. Thank you. I think I have it all sorted out now. And Marie?" "Yes, what's worrying you? We're not alone here, just you and me, are we?" "If you are asking if we live here together, the answer is yes. We are living in the house we grew up in. You and I managed to buy this house from the people who bought it after our parents died, and we've all lived here for about 5 years. "Oh, I think I understand now why there are so many memories floating around me that don't make sense. Other people must have left pieces of themselves here, and I get them mixed up with ours. Don't you think that's the way it works, Marie?" Marie laughed and patted my arm. "I'm sure that's it." "Thank you, Marie. Sometimes I think I may have lost my mind a little when I hear them talking, Mom and Dad, Daddy singing. I don't know what I'd do if I never heard his voice again." "Well, I wouldn't worry," my sister said, laying down plates on the large table. "We will never be without the people who came before us." Walking into the hall, she called, "Come on, everyone, let's eat before the soup gets cold." The end.